make it do it. Makes us honor, better, faster, stronger.
Campbell on second down and 5.5. Looks right. Comes back to the left. Going long for Gordon. He's out there and he caught the ball at the 20, at the 15, 10, 5. Touchdown!
Well, unbelievable catch, unbelievable throw.
Coming to you live from Browns headquarters in Berea, Ohio. This is Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Takes the snap, Dalton back, looking near side, throws it, picked off, and an open run. It's Joe Hayden, and he's in, touchdown!
And now, here are your hosts, Vic Carucci and Nathan Zagora.
And it's a football Monday. A very cold one out there. Hope you are finding a way to at least stay warm as you listen to us here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. We are going to spend much of the show, as we're going to probably spend a lot of shows, I'm going to say at least for the next week, possibly two, as the Browns go through this coaching search, not expecting anything to be done on that front through this week. That much I've been able to gather in the time here in Berea today. But you never know. But I'm operating on the premise that this is going to go on at least another week, possibly more than that. But we'll try to keep you up to speed on what is happening on the coach search as best we can. And one of the guests we're going to have, well, two of the guests today can, I think, fill us in nicely because of their ability to report on it. One being Mary Kay Cabot from Cleveland.com, Cleveland Plain Dealer. She'll join us at 1:30. And then at 2 o'clock, we're going to have a writer, Bob Candata, who covers the Seahawks for the Seattle Times, because the Browns have interviewed Dan Quinn, the defensive coordinator of the Seahawks. We want to find out a little bit more about him. We've been trying to bring you some background information on the candidates who've been interviewed. On Saturday, it was Josh McDaniels from the Patriots, the offensive coordinator. And, of course, we heard last week from Shalice Manzi-Young from the Boston Globe, who gave us some background on him. The other thing we'll get into today, quite obviously, the playoffs. Football is going on, and a very incredibly exciting weekend of playoffs, my friend.
Unbelievable weekend of football. Notorious, good to be back with you here today. And, yeah, it really was basically all you could have asked for. Three of the four games decided by 3 points or less, one being an upset with San Diego taking out Cincinnati. So you tell me where you want to start. We could go chronologically. We could start with the Bengals since they're the AFC North. You tell me, Notorious, because I have a lot of thoughts about these games and a lot to talk about.
Yeah, me too. You know what? I'll share thoughts. And then as far as the order, I mean, we can bounce back and forth because it was that kind of weekend. But I want to start with Colin Kaepernick because I thought what he did last night, right, against the Green Bay Packers was the defining transformative moment of his career. I felt all along he would be that kind of guy in terms of this season being a transformative season for him. It started slow for him, but what he did last night was incredible because he did it not only as a runner, and his running component clearly was a difference-making element against the Packers, but the way he threw the ball as well. But I thought the Packers, Dom Capers, gets an F for how they tried to defense a guy that both of us would know that you've got to contain. They did nothing in the way of containment. They insisted on trying to rush up the middle against him and Colin Kaepernick, and then play single coverage, and Colin Kaepernick looks downfield, guys are covered, defenders have their back to him, he goes and runs and makes just huge play after huge play. And of course, Michael Crabtree, what a coming out party for him. A guy who just showed tremendous hands, tremendous big plays, tremendous work after the catch. So the story of that game to me is what Colin Kaepernick was able to do and how he outshined Aaron Rodgers on that huge stage, that frigid stage at Lambeau Field. The other big story to me, of course, started these playoffs off in Indianapolis, and Andrew Luck grew up in ways that I've never seen a young quarterback grow up. I mean, we've known what this guy could be, obviously, top overall pick and a really strong rookie year. But that was incredible to come back in the second half, to rebound from those interceptions, and to show the poise and the presence of mind. Obviously, the scoop fumble and touchdown on his part will go down as a play for the ages, but defining moments of a career. And I'll tell you this, when I watched that game, Nathan, I said to my wife in the second half, while that team was trailing by 28 points, I said, I don't feel good about this for the Chiefs. I'm seeing too many guys get hurt for them, number one. And number two, I said, this guy Luck, with the ball in the second half, if he gets enough shots at it, they're just going to, and Pep Hamilton, their offensive coordinator, they're just going to turn it loose and turn it on. And obviously with T.Y. Hilton and nobody to cover him, it was on, and it was, and the opportunity was there. So kudos to the Colts and especially to Andrew Luck for what will be defining, memorable. Those, to me, those two quarterbacking stories, the second half comeback by Luck, the game that Kaepernick had, I think set incredible tones for those two young quarterbacks' careers.
Yeah, and these are two guys who are basically in their second seasons in the NFL as starters. I know chronologically it's the third year that Kaepernick's been in the NFL, but he only started 10 games last year before the Super Bowl, and now he takes over. And I will say this for Dom Capers, dealing with a lot of injuries on the defensive side of things, but Kaepernick really hadn't run like that this year. They had saved it, I believe, for moments like this. And you talked about Crabtree coming back. 8 catches, 125 yards. What Crabtree does is makes it very difficult to play zone defense on the 49ers. One of the ways that teams had been containing Kaepernick was by playing zone. That huge third down and 11, that was man coverage. He made the pump fake, broke contain, and was gone. And all the defenders you saw were running with their backs and following their receivers. Colin Kaepernick's final drive right there, the 5-minute drive, leaving no time on the clock, converting a couple huge third downs, will be a defining moment in his career. You are correct about that. He has now beaten Aaron Rodgers 3 times. Yeah. 3-0 against Aaron Rodgers in the last 12 months. That is not easy to do. Colin Kaepernick with a phenomenal game. And you talked about Crabtree. And people forgot. People were down on Kaepernick at the beginning of the season. Right. Oh, the offense isn't the same. Of course it's not the same. Michael Crabtree, when Colin Kaepernick took over, became the go-to guy. Michael Crabtree had six games, of 100 yards receiving last season. 5 of them came from week 13 through the Super Bowl with Colin Kaepernick. 101, 93, 107, 172, 119, 109. He was the go-to guy. Now you have Bolden, you got Crabtree, and then you get every now and then the opportunity for the big play with Vernon Davis. I thought he even missed Vernon Davis a couple of times, but nonetheless did enough. And the final drive, that's what it is. When you're a quarterback that has an opportunity, because you don't want to give Aaron Rodgers the ball back. You can't give Aaron Rodgers the ball back. To use the clock the way they did, to go through, go down the field, and win in those conditions, I thought was unbelievable. The poise he showed on that final drive, because not only was it the one third down run, it was the other one where he stepped up in the pocket, flushed out to the left, and drilled Michael Crabtree for about 15 yards in the middle of the field, a tough throw across his body. I thought Colin Kaepernick was fantastic. I think the 49ers' defense is playing very well. Obviously, the referees, I thought there was some poor officiating again in that game. But nonetheless, this is a 49ers team to me that is peaking at absolutely the right time. And you have Colin Kaepernick, a guy who, in essence, won that game. I thought coming into it, given the deficiencies of the Green Bay run defense, that it was going to be all Frank Gore. They held Frank Gore to 66 yards on 20 carries. Yeah. It was Colin Kaepernick winning that game with his arm and with his leg. And when all you need to know is in a duel against Aaron Rodgers, in the elements that should have favored Aaron Rodgers, Colin Kaepernick accounted for 325 yards of offense. Aaron Rodgers accounted for 188.
Yeah, I think the summary was perfect. The summary of Kaepernick versus Rodgers and going 3-0 against that guy, the presumed bad boy of the NFL as a quarterback, the bad man as he's been described by Stephen A. Smith, among others, and I don't know if that's the endorsement I want to use, but for sake of something better.
Sure.
I mean, the guy is, and I respect and see him in every conversation as perhaps the best of all quarterbacks in the game today, but under those circumstances, it was going to take something exceptional to get there, and Kaepernick did that. And I wholeheartedly agree that this was saved, that he was doing a lot less of the running, Kaepernick, during the regular season, and now he did it yesterday in the perfect conditions, really, to do it because of the type of defense they were playing, that aggressive approach of Dom Capers, and they let the game come to them. The 49ers did not come in there with an agenda that said, you know what, we can only win this game if Frank Gore pounds it out on the ground, if our offensive line, if our offensive line gets very physical up front, that'll be the way we win it. I mean, that's the way you'd prefer to win it, and that's the way the 49ers go into a lot of games because their line is incredible and physical and big and strong. But they, as that game unfolded, what happened was is they got away from that, rightfully so, looked for the bigger plays to take, those shots to take through the air, and when those weren't there, Kaepernick ran. And when they were there, Kaepernick made the throws, Crabtree made the catches, and you mentioned, too, other receivers chimed in with what they need, support. The supporting cast made those kinds of plays. And what does it say about Crabtree, too, and his presence and place among some of the great receivers now in this league? I think he has definitely moved himself up the charts, Nathan.
Oh, I think he's a top 10 receiver in the league. Just look at the difference in the offense once he came back for Colin Kaepernick. Clearly his go-to guy, 100 yards receiving in two of the last three games. He stepped up. He's come back at the right time. This is a guy who tore his Achilles earlier this year.
Yeah.
That was in before you got into training camp. He tore his Achilles. So for him to be back now, playing at the level he is absolutely very, very impressive. And he is one of the top receivers in the league. Highly touted, obviously, coming out of college where he was setting every record imaginable. And it's great to see for this 49ers team. And Michael Crabtree, Colin Kaepernick. Because before, you had Anquan Boldin, who wasn't good. He wins in one-on-one matchups by being covered and still catching the ball. Now you have a guy who can win one-on-one matchups. You have a guy who is an absolute zone buster. Crabtree, one of the best young receivers, I think, in the league at sitting down and finding the soft spot in the zone, plus the speed of Davis. I think it was clear Green Bay's their game plan was we're going to stuff Frank Gore.
Right.
You beat us, Colin Kaepernick, yep. And that's what he did.
Yeah. Yes. They dared that young quarterback to rise to the occasion in the frigid conditions. He had his face covered. By the way, a very smart thing to do in this real cold, cold conditions. The thing that happens that you're told, players are told by the sports scientists, is make sure when you're not playing, your mouth is covered, your nose is covered, because that's the area where you're going to lose a lot of oxygen. You're going to lose,
sure.
And you can maintain heat, but you'll lose a lot of your stamina that way, because it does take your breath away at a certain point. And he was very wise in how he handled that. Of course, he had the exposed guns in that game. He went out there with the bare arms, and impressive that he did that and didn't even look like anything was bothering him, and it obviously didn't. I thought, Nathan, the best coaching job of the weekend, the best coaching job took place in Philadelphia, and it was the combination of Sean Payton and Rob Ryan for the New Orleans Saints. And I start with Payton because a lot of us go into that game thinking, Saints, Drew Brees, they're going to throw it. They're going to throw it. They're going to throw it. It's going to be all about keeping pace with another explosive, quick-tempo offense that the Eagles have and just try to hold your own there points-wise. And what happened? Nope, they ran it. And they ran it well. They went to a power scheme. Obviously, Brees had a problem or two with some turnovers, but truthfully, it was all about their ability to run it, control the clock, set the tempo of the game, and that played right into the hands of their defense. They were one as a team because that offensive philosophy allowed them, that ground and power control attack, allowed them defensively to do what they did, which was stay stout against the run. And when LeSean McCoy gets only 77 rushing yards, you know that's trouble for the Philadelphia Eagles.
It certainly was trouble for the Philadelphia Eagles. I thought a very good game plan, a different approach than what was expected, and they were able to execute it. And they obviously saw something in their scouting, in their game plan preparation, that made them think that was the right approach to beat this Philadelphia Eagles team. And the Saints really controlled that game. I felt that even though, you know, it wasn't over until they got down there and kicked the field goal, the Saints were in control of that game. And how about, speaking of former Cleveland Browns kickers having a nice weekend, Phil Dawson. I wanted to say that was one of the things I wanted to make sure we hit before we go into this game. But Phil Dawson, the game winner after all these years to get to kick that meaningful of a kick. I think obviously his time in Cleveland helped him with the cold weather. And to bang that one through, very impressive. And a tip of the cap to Phil Dawson, well-deserved. And certainly very happy to see him in that moment get the job done. And then Shane Graham goes 4-for-4 for the New Orleans Saints and kicks them to victory with a game winner as well. A very interesting game plan. 36 rushes for the team, for the New Orleans Saints, only 30 passes, but they were very efficient in both. They averaged 8.3 yards per attempt throwing the ball, 5.1 yards per attempt running the ball. And if Drew Brees doesn't have the two interceptions, that's the thing. They lost the turnover battle 2-0 and beat the Philadelphia Eagles. That might be the most impressive stat of all.
Yeah, I think so as well. And the other story about this weekend, obviously in Cincinnati, And we had talked about this any number of times on the show, certainly before both Browns games against the Bengals. And that, of course, is the story of Andy Dalton. And Andy Dalton couldn't have come up smaller as a quarterback than he did in that ball game. And I thought that was a career wrecker for him. He had to do one of two things. He had to make liars out of those who say he doesn't have what it takes to be a big-time quarterback, or he was going to do exactly what he did, and that was fall right into the hands of the critics who have said, you just don't have it. This is not going to work. You don't give this team enough that has built itself around you with all the weapons that you have at your disposal. And he did come up small. As large as Luck was in that Colts game, as large as we talked about Colin Kaepernick was for San Francisco, he was small. And that's the thing that I think is most bothersome, because it looked like it was almost a self-fulfilling prophecy. It looked like all the pressure that was on him to respond, he carried, and it got to him, and he broke. He was making poor decisions. I thought his throw, the way the ball left his hand was troubling, but the way he decided where he decided to throw was bad. Of course, he has the fumble when he's falling forward, and all those things just added up and compounded into a situation where now in Cincinnati the question is, what are they going to do for a quarterback? And I don't know immediately that you could do anything other than hang with this guy another year contractually. But if you're Marvin Lewis and you've done this one and done thing now so many times, whatever it is, five in his career, 11 years of coaching the Bengals, and you can, obviously it took more than one thing to cost them that game, but he's got to look with that wary eye and say, this quarterback is going to ultimately kill me as a coach here.
When I was on that other pregame show yesterday on CBS Sports Network, I said, it is all about Andy. He is the X factor. As he goes, they go. When Andy Dalton throws three or more touchdowns, they go. They were 6-0 entering that game. When Andy Dalton threw more interceptions than touchdowns, they were 2-3. They have a very difficult time overcoming bad Andy, and this was bad Andy. Throws off the back foot to the outside, intercepted. Horrible read on the pass to Tyler Eifert, intercepted. The fumble, yeah, he was making a good play, but you got to hold on and secure the football. As the quarterback, it is your job to take care of that football. He did not do that, and when he's bad, they're bad. And when you look at it, the two toys they brought in to really help Andy Dalton, because they know he's not a great deep ball thrower. You bring in Giovanni Bernard. He fumbles when getting hit from behind. Tyler Eifert, no catches on the day, interception when throwing to him. Andy Dalton was atrocious. They lost. They are one and done. There was more pressure on him than anybody this wild card weekend, and he wilted under that pressure. And that is a great thing, I think, for the Browns, because now there are questions in Cincinnati. The Ravens didn't make the playoffs. The Steelers didn't make the playoffs. This is a division that is not as strong as it was perceived to be at the beginning of last year.
Fair point, and you're right. Maybe that is good news, that there's bad news for other
teams.
We
don't know who the Browns are going to be just yet.
That's about the best I could go with right now, where we don't know who their coach is or who their quarterback's going to be. But in light of the fact that the rest of the division maybe is sucking more than a lot of people thought it would, we'll take that as a good thing. 216-578-0850. 216-578-0850. If we can get your barks from the pound, we want those, obviously. Tweet us at Browns_daily. We got Megan Rock here, who is tweeting on the show, and will also help filter out what we've got to have. And I say filter, I don't mean filter by removing them, unless you're really silly with your tweets. But if they're good ones that can be good questions, we want to address them. We've already seen some very strong ones in here. So give us your strong tweets. We want to respond to those during the course of the show. Gerard Cherry, by the way, will join us at 2:45. Vic Carucci, Nathan Zagura, this is Cleveland Browns Daily. It is driven by Liberty Ford.